This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
When a major weather event strikes, Bob Henson is deluged with media calls. During the summer, when we agreed to talk, we had no idea a monster storm for the history books would strike Houston, all of East Texas, and Louisiana. It is far from over as we speak, but let's get an update from the author of one of the most widely used college textbooks on weather. Bob Henson worked at the National Center for Atmospheric Research. He's the author of The Thinking Person's Guide to Climate Change. I read Bob's reports often at Wonderground, the Weather Underground Hub. Bob Henson, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, thank you, Alex. It's great to be back.
Well, you know, we have a fire emergency right now here in British Columbia. There's smoke out there in the air, but it's nothing like the tragedy unfolding in Houston, Texas. Bob, talk to us about some of the records this strange event called Harvey has set.
Well, the records are still tumbling pretty much as we speak, but there's some records that we already know are completely gone, and quite a few, actually. I mean, I think the headline in terms of records is that this is by far the most rain that's ever fallen on a major U.S. city over the course of a few days. I mean, not just by a little bit, but by a lot. Basically, the Harris County is pretty much synonymous with Houston. You know, the city limits, I believe, are almost the same as the Harris County, if not identical. And the heaviest rain pretty much encompassed the entire county. So that was one of the dimensions of the tragedy. But in that area, in Harris County, and in actually a broader area that is, you know, almost the size of, say, Rhode Island, rainfall totals were above 30 inches, in some cases above 40 inches, which is a phenomenal amount. For those of you in the metric system, more than a meter, you know, to have that much fall in a few days, even for a wet area like Houston, is really really devastating. When you translate that into recurrence intervals, which is what are often known as return periods, or say a 1 in 100 year event or a 1 in 1,000, the amount of rain we're talking about over Harris County is, you know, roughly a return interval of 500 to 1,000 years. It doesn't mean it would recur that often like clockwork, but on average over many, many thousands of years, you would expect something like this to happen about every 500 to 1,000 years. So an enormous, enormous amount of rain. We knew this area could rain heavily. It's just not usually over this broad an area and not usually centered right on Houston. So those were some of the really intense aspects of this storm. It did set the record already for the highest amount of rain to fall from a tropical cyclone in the U.S. The old record was 48 inches, set in 1978, also in Texas. And at last check, the most highest official total from the reliable observer was 49.32 inches.
Wow. Well, you know, I have seen archival footage showing that Houston has flooded before, as you know, back from 1935 on. Does this big storm compare to that previous flooding, or is this something else again?
I would say this is something else again. I mean, certainly Houston has had big rains, and a lot of the flooding, for example, the events in 1929 and 1935, a lot of that flooding occurred because the city hadn't really figured out how to deal with its waterways. So you had waterways like Buffalo Bayou that head from West Houston into downtown, and so those would just become rampaging rivers in a heavy rainstorm. It wouldn't necessarily have to be a gigantic one, just a flash flood type setup. And as a result, the city decided to develop two big reservoirs that sit west of downtown about 15 miles, and those are called Attucks and Barker. And that's been a pretty interesting story the last day or two in itself, because those reservoirs were designed to hold basically a 1,000-year flood event, which is somewhat different from a 1,000-year rain. You can have a 1,000-year rain, but it may not necessarily cause a 1,000-year flood. The flooding depends on the landscape and, you know, not only how much rain is falling, but how much has fallen in the last few weeks, say, and whether it's falling on pavement or absorbent ground. In any event, those reservoirs were designed to handle a 1,000-year rainfall, and they began overtopping. Attucks Reservoir, the water began to flow around the spillway for the first time since these dams were built in the 1940s. So we're still going to have to see how high the water goes and how high it stays high, because these dams are not in the best shape, and there's no sign of them in the collapse or anything, but this is certainly going to keeping those dams together a bit more challenging.
You know, Bob, I don't fully understand why Harvey would stall over Houston and East Texas like that. Why didn't it move on like other storms do?
That's a very good question. And in fact, you know, this is one of those quirks of weather. Sometimes the currents that steer tropical cyclones, the upper-level winds that we think of as the jet stream, but in fact they permeate the whole atmosphere a few miles high, sometimes there's just little areas we call call areas, which means the winds are have just collapsed. There's just no wind there. The flow is all going in other directions, and that's exactly what happened to Harvey. It moved up just west of Houston, and then there was simply no air to cart it away, and it sat there. This is not super common or frequent, but there are really vivid examples. I mean, for example, 1963, Hurricane Flora might be one of the closest analogs. That's a hurricane that moved up toward Cuba and then basically stalled and did a small loop, just like Harvey is doing, and then moved on off. But it actually dumped on the order of 100 inches of rain on Santiago de Cuba.
That's crazy amount of rain. You might as well just go underwater for a while, like the ocean or something.
Yeah, if you live in a dry climate, it's kind of hard to fathom or picture that much rain in a short time.
I can't imagine it. And of course, you know, making it worse, as you kind of mentioned, is Houston is such a big sprawling city, and there's so much concrete and so much pavement and buildings that there's nowhere for the water to go now that would have formerly just gone into the ground or found ways into the Gulf.
You're absolutely right, Alex. I actually went to college in Houston at Rice University, so I spent 5 years there. I vividly remember seeing fellow students taking kayaks to the streets of campus one time during heavy rain. And I was actually in Houston in 1979 when the United States 24-hour rainfall record was set, and that was 42 inches in one day. And this storm has not yet topped that record, to my knowledge. It's gotten close, but that one may be really difficult to pull down from its pedestal. But there are many other rainfall records were set. So it wasn't so much that one spot got, you know, a record amount in one day, but that a large area got a record amount over several days. And obviously that puts huge stress on hydrologic systems.
Well, now, the sheer magnitude of that endless rain reminds us of a hotter, wetter atmosphere. Do you think climate change is a contributing factor to what happened with Harvey?
Oh, absolutely. It's in the mix. The way I've been thinking of it is that hurricanes are natural phenomena. They're happening in an atmosphere that is not natural. It's not the same atmosphere that we had 50 or 100 years ago. You know, quite literally, the carbon dioxide, which obviously the leading greenhouse gas added to the air by humans, that's up basically 30% since the industrial age, and more than 10 or 20% since the 50s. So these are natural events. You know, hurricanes have been around as long as we know, but they're happening in this climate context that is different. So it's almost as if you have different ingredients in the kitchen, or you're stocking more and more of certain kinds of ingredients, and the chef just waltzes in, who normally makes meals, but there's just a little more spice in one meal or something because there's just more spice available. I mean, it's kind of a crude analogy, but the idea is that the ingredients that go into all weather systems, you know, we've always had systems that have stalled. We've always had heavy rainers. Climate change is associated with a lot of the factors that made Harvey worse. We know in many parts of the world that the heaviest rainstorms are becoming heavier. This is a really well-established finding, very consistent with what we would expect with science theory, that you've just got more moisture in the atmosphere in a warmer climate. There's more evaporating from the oceans, and that gets concentrated and squeezed out when you have a big rainmaker like Harvey was. And in addition, storm surge is higher, and that's a very definitive link to climate change. You know, oceans are higher, so when you get a hurricane, you've got a little bit higher storm surge. Now, that wasn't a particular issue with Harvey. There wasn't really that much storm surge damage. But certainly the rainfall and the storm's ability to intensify rapidly, hurricanes need warm water, and the waters in that part of the Gulf are on the order of about a half degree Celsius warm, or about a degree Fahrenheit, as a result of climate change. Now, they were also about a degree Celsius above average for this time of year, but that can happen any time. That could have happened 100 years ago. So I think the more relevant index is what is the long-term warming in that part of the world. And you know, every time you boost the ocean temperatures by degree, you add a few percent to the amount of moisture that can be in the air. So I think that's a very relevant link. I think all these things say that, you know, Harvey is worse because of climate change. It's a very hard thing to prove, just as it's hard to prove that a certain cigarette gave you lung cancer. It's really something you diagnose over long periods of time, looking at many storms or many cigarettes. But certainly the distinctive aspects of Harvey relate pretty closely to climate change, both observed climate change and expected climate change.
Yeah, I've been doing this for a few years, and I've never seen so many reports of extreme rainfall events all over the world. So it's just like a new phenomenon that keeps blurting out over the weather. You know, when it comes to Houston, there were multiple reports warning this kind of flooding could hit the city, and the city says it was prepared, but not for that kind of rainfall. Bob, I'm wondering, do you think Houston can adapt to this, or is it going to have to give up some ground, maybe permanently?
Houston is a challenge when it comes to floods, although a lot of cities are, but I think the Houston psychology, kind of the way Houston sees itself, having lived there a while, I think that makes it a challenge because Houston is kind of famously a very laissez-faire place. You know, there's very, very little zoning. You can, in some senses, almost have a church next to a strip mall, and nobody seems to care much. The city prides itself on being able to do things its own way and to have as light a government hand as possible. And that leads to a really dynamic economy at times. But, of course, the downside is that the less planning you have, the more vulnerable you are to events like this. One thing that really amazed me that I discovered just the last few days is that these two reservoirs in western Houston, Attucks and Barkers, those are what are called dry reservoirs. They were built in the 40s, not to hold water for the city to use, but simply to be retaining basins when you get a heavy rain. So normally they're dry, they're covered with grass and trees, but they're also partially covered with houses. There's private land abutting the reservoir on the other side of the dams, and there are houses there in the 500-year floodplain, is my understanding. And sure enough, with Harvey, just in the last couple of days, those houses have flooded. And there are probably a few cities in the country that would have a setup like that where houses are adjoining a reservoir literally on the back side of it with the knowledge that they could flood, and in fact now they have. So the civic philosophy of Houston makes it tough for it to adapt. Certainly the amount of growth they've had, the gigantic amount of pavement. In fact, the watershed behind Attucks, when it was built in the 40s, was essentially entirely rural. It's almost 50% now urban. And so you've got water pouring off concrete. You know, there's so much just existing infrastructure in Houston. I'm not sure how they're going to take the next steps after this, but I know there will be a lot of attention put to it. And, you know, hopefully some creative thinking and some ways to at least kind of come to terms with it.
This is Radio EcoShock. We're doing a bit of radio storm chasing during Hurricane Harvey. Our guest is the senior meteorologist, author, and blogger Bob Henson. Well, adding to your point, you know, when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, thousands of people fled to Houston, and some stayed there, so it's possible some folks are getting flooded out for the second time. When this is over, you've got, last I heard, 9,000 people in one convention center and more coming. There won't be enough homes for them all. Those homes will be damaged. They have to be rebuilt, replaced if they can be. There could be an exodus again, as there was from New Orleans, this time from Houston. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely believe there will be to some extent. I mean, this was a civic tragedy, and I believe over the coming days we're going to see just how bad it is. It's one thing to get a quick flood in a house where the water comes up and then a few hours later it goes down, but I think in many of these cases you're going to have water in homes for several days, and I think that makes it a lot harder to restore a house. And you've got thousands upon thousands of homes that have been flooded. It's going to be really tough. Even some of the homes flooded behind Barker and Attucks Reservoir, because those that reservoir waters have to drain down gradually, some of those houses are going to be underwater for a month. So there is going to be, I think, a housing crisis in Houston. I think there's going to be a lot of the same angst and stress and anxiety that hit after Katrina in New Orleans. It's a bigger city and probably an economy that could bounce back a little bit better than New Orleans in some ways, but there's still going to be a lot of pain and suffering. I should note that I have already heard of firsthand stories I've seen on TV of folks who were drowned out in Katrina, went to Houston, and now have lost everything again. So very, very, very heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And, you know, another part of this is we don't know how much the storm will cost or whether governments can even cope with the recovery or how long it'll take to restore that Houston region, if it can be. But if it takes a long time, it's possible that another big flood could happen even before Texans manage to get over Harvey, are the odds increasing that extreme rainfall events will strike again along the Gulf of Mexico?
I believe so. There has been some good work done, for example, by Climate Central in the last couple of years, in particular following the what we call the no-name flood in southeast Louisiana, which was just last year, where a tropic-like system, it wasn't technically a tropical cyclone, but it was like a very weak depression-type storm, moved from the Florida panhandle very slowly westward across Louisiana and dumped 20, 30 inches of rain over, over a couple of days. And Baton Rouge and some other areas were really hit hard. It was the most expensive U.S. disaster of 2016, more than $10 billion in costs, and many people flooded out without insurance. So in response to that, Climate Central did some work and found that the likelihood of that kind of rainstorm along the central Gulf Coast has increased and will continue to increase. And it just seems to be what's happening. You know, it's a little hard to suss out how much of a particular flood experience is because of the way the land's been built and developed and how much is due to the rain. But certainly in Houston, the flood events have become worse. You know, the record flood in Abbott's Reservoir was the Tax Day flood of 2016, so just 2 years ago. And so in the whole last 70 years, the two worst floods have been in the last 2 years. And I think that's a pretty telling index.
Yes, indeed. And just in the news, the Indian megacity of Mumbai was also crippled by incredible rains and floods at the end of August. And we may get to the point where a disrupted climate challenges this whole model of very large urban areas, or maybe it's the other way around. Megacities are the focal points for disrupting the climate. Bob, what do you think?
Well, certainly megacities have a lot of people that affect the climate. You know, there can be efficiencies in cities. I mean, the carbon footprint of many New Yorkers, for example, is quite low because they live in a densely populated area. They don't use as many resources, maybe, as folks living in a sprawling acreage. Those folks fly a lot, though, which I fly more than I ought to for the sake of the climate. Then you can have a very large footprint. So I don't know if urbanity itself makes climate change worse. Certainly, if cities are in the developing world or places where people can live more lavish lifestyles, then you may have more carbon emissions. That's why I think it's important to do some leapfrog technologies so people, for example, go right from maybe having no power to having renewable energy instead of having to have coal-driven power in between. But getting back to the point about the way cities are built and events like floods, yes, a lot of big cities are on waterways or coastlines because people like to live near the water. And the larger city is, the harder it is to get people out. The more flood-prone it can be because of all those impervious concrete surfaces. And I do think that basically water, or flood water, is going to be one of the more and more one of the big natural disasters of this century that we just have to deal with.
Well, you know, when these things happen, the media tends to flood in with a big spotlight, and then people get a bit bored with that news, and something else happens, and the floodlights move on. But what should we be watching for as the after effects of Hurricane Harvey unwind?
Well, this is going to be a big test. For example, President Trump has emphasized infrastructure both in his campaign and since he took office. So if there were a golden moment for infrastructure development, I would say Houston is a good one because there's going to have to be a lot of development of the dam system. There may need to be a lot of road reconstruction, perhaps drainage systems. So I think this is a real opportunity to be innovative and creative with infrastructure. Unfortunately, it's going to take money, and it doesn't grow on trees. For some early estimates I've seen, really ballpark, back-of-the-envelope estimates are, if just, say, 10% of the homes in Houston are lost, that would be roughly $30, $40 billion in damage. And then when you tack on the thousands of lost cars and other damage, we're probably talking a Katrina-level hurricane, if not worse. So probably the most costliest hurricane in U.S. history when it's all said and done. And one thing to watch in particular is many, many of these folks who have lost everything do not have flood insurance. In the United States, we do not have a private flood insurance model. For many folks, the only place to get it is through the government. And if you're not in a 100-year floodplain, you're generally not required to get flood insurance to have a mortgage. So being the humans that we are, we'll put off costs unless we think we're going to have to pay for them down the line. So many, many folks in Houston, I think only 1 in 6 homes are covered by the flood insurance program. Even that is going to throw a number on the program because the program is already $25 billion in debt. This could add tens of billions more. So the government is facing a twofold tab. It has to bolster the flood insurance program, which is actually right now set to expire at the end of September. So this is going to be a real high-profile event. And as well, there's going to probably be what they call a supplemental bill to pay for a recovery for Harvey, just as we had for Sandy and Katrina. And that could be on the order of tens of billions of dollars. And these dwarf some of the things like the ask for funding for a wall between the U.S. and Mexico. So there may be some interesting political battles ahead.
We'll be watching for that. We've been talking with Bob Henson, the veteran meteorologist, journalist, and storm chaser from Colorado. When it comes to major weather events, there's no one better, in my opinion. Find Bob Henson at wonderground.com and follow him on Twitter at bhensonweather. Bob, on behalf of our listeners, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Alex. Take good care.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Covering the world, this is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.